It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. There's a theory that people are dying early because of despair. That there's some researchers don't think it's that simple.
But it challenges whether their response to it is despair, as opposed to working that much harder to make ends meet, to support their families, to overcome the obstacles in their way.
We'll hear more on that in just a few. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginia's film tax credit was eliminated by the West Virginia legislature in 2018 after a legislative audit report deemed the credit as providing only minimal economic impact. But people who work in the film industry don't agree. An attempt to resurrect the credit failed this past session, but Liz McCormick reports supporters are hopeful it will make it through the next legislative session.
Robert Tennell is a West Virginia filmmaker who was born and raised in Marion County. He's been making movies professionally since 1980, and since 2005, he and his brother Jeffrey have been running a production company called Allegheny Image Factory out of the Morgantown area. They've produced award-winning films, documentaries, music videos, and commercials. One of their recent feature films was Feast of the Seven Fishes, based on Robert Tennell's graphic novel of the same name. The film featured actors Skylar Gisondo and Madison Eisman.
What was Juke talking about? Seven?
The Seven Fishes? Yeah. The Feast of the Seven Fishes. It's something we do every Christmas Eve. I mean, all the Italians around here do it.
What, eat seven kinds of fish?
We have seven, but we're supposed to. We honestly make so many different kinds of dishes, I'm not sure if we're in some sort of violation or not. Some families only do three or five, some do more. I think the only thing is just has to be an odd number. Somebody told me that maybe it has something to do with representing the seven sacraments. But it's not like a big religious thing for us though, you know? I mean, we cook fish and we party and that's pretty much it. The whole family's there, friends, it's a blast.
Wow. Feast of the Seven Fishes will be available later this year, and it was filmed completely in West Virginia. Tennell says production of the film benefited greatly from the state's now-defunct film tax credit. He says the movie was able to be filmed and produced in-state, attracting actors and crew from the larger film industry outside West Virginia, thanks to incentive from the tax credit. Now, since the credit was eliminated, Tennell says it's been harder to attract big productions to film in West Virginia.
Stripping us of the tax credit effectively disabled our ability to bring feature films or television projects to West Virginia. I mean, it's that simple. Whether you agree with the tax incentive business model or not, the reality is the industry and states and even national governments embrace the policy. And it simply is the cost of doing business.
Tennell says after losing the credit, it cost his production company two films and the potential of bringing about $4 million into the state.
We say we want to diversify the state's economy, and that's a big thing. We want to diversify. We don't want to just lean on extractive industries. It's just too up and down, and it's putting all your eggs in one basket. And here's a really smart way to do it, and a way that boosts not only the entertainment industry, but it's just a great way to promote tourism.
During the 2019 state legislative session, Delegate Diana Graves, a Republican from Kanawha County, introduced a bill that would have reinstated the film tax credit, but with tweaks and adjustments based on the legislative audit report that made 12 recommendations if the credit were to be kept. Graves has worked in the state's film industry as both an accountant and producer, and she argues that the tax credit was working, but admits it did have problems, but problems she sought to fix with her bill.
Even the audit admitted that it brought economic benefit to the state. It just didn't think there was enough benefit to justify keeping it. Well, then fine, let's not get rid of it completely. It's working. Let's make it better. That was my goal.
Graves's bill increased the cap of the film tax credit from $5 million to $10 million, and it would have required a film production to spend at least $50,000 in state before they would be eligible for the credit. After that, for every $100 spent, that production company could take home $27, but the remaining $73 would stay in state. Her bill managed to pass out of the House of Delegates, but not without pushback. House Finance Chairman Delegate Eric Householder of Berkeley County was opposed to the bill. Householder admits he's not a fan of tax credits. He says they allow the government to pick economic winners and losers. He also argues the film tax credit just wasn't justifiable.
In 10 years, only $8.6 million in tax credits were used. And if it's such an attractive, competitive force, we would see more companies coming in here, wanting to come in here and take advantage of the tax credits, and it just wasn't happening.
He also felt Delegate Graves's bill didn't make enough of the changes that were recommended by the audit.
If she tightens all those up or takes those recommendations, I think it'll pass the scrutiny. Right now, I don't foresee it happening since, remember, it was repealed in 2018. So maybe in a year or so, maybe next legislative session, it might stand a better chance.
Graves's bill may have made it out of the House chamber last year, but it was never taken up by the Senate Finance Committee. In an emailed statement to West Virginia Public Broadcasting, Senate Finance Chairman Craig Blair of Berkeley County says he also felt Graves didn't make enough changes recommended in the audit report. Like Blair and Householder, Graves identifies as a fiscal conservative, and she says she doesn't often vote for tax credits, but says the film tax credit is different.
The West Virginia film tax credit, it functions much more like advertising expense than a traditional tax credit. We are trying to entice film companies and, you know, movie studios to come here and film. But instead of giving this money up front, like you do with advertising expense, we only give it if you come here. So that means that our advertising expense has a 100% success rate.
Graves says the film tax credit helps to diversify the state's economy. She plans to reintroduce her bill during the 2020 state legislative session. She says she hopes she can communicate to the Senate in particular of the credit's benefits, increase the cap, and get it signed by the governor. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today. Highs in the 80s, mostly clear tonight with lows in the 60s. Sunshine tomorrow with highs in the 80s to near 90 degrees. And mostly sunny Friday, a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms with highs in the 80s and low 90s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the Walls Foundation, Fighting for Employment for All, and A Green Jobs Agenda. More information at walswheeling.com. Low-income Americans are dying at a higher rate than high-income Americans. In fact, recently, life expectancy for low-income Americans has begun to drop, a trend largely attributed to drug and alcohol-related deaths, popularly called deaths of despair.
The least well-off Americans have seen their wages become stagnant, their jobs become obsolete, their neighborhoods crumbling in various ways. And so there's a thought that that leads to despair among the working class or the less educated Americans, and they turn to drugs or suicide.
That's the University of Michigan professor Arline Geronimus, who was the lead on a new study that argues higher rates of death among low-income Americans are due to inequity, not despair. Here's the rest of her conversation with health reporter Kara Lofton.
But your research actually challenges that theory, correct?
That's correct. My theory doesn't necessarily challenge that the increase is due in some way to the fact that life has gotten much harder and resources have gotten fewer for the working class and for the least educated Americans. But it challenges whether their response to it is despair, as opposed to working that much harder to make ends meet, to support their families, to overcome the obstacles in their way. And that there's a rich literature suggesting that when you work so tenaciously against barriers or difficulties or trying to make ends meet or working multiple jobs, that itself can lead to chronic physiological stress reactions in your body that over time cause wear and tear in your body and can lead to sort of accelerated aging, the early onset of a variety of chronic diseases, cardiovascular diseases, cancers. And so you might also see this increasing inequity in life expectancy if what was happening was people are working so hard and with under uncertainty and hard can people are working so hard and with under uncertainty and hard conditions that it wears away at their bodies.
So you're basically pointing to research that shows that chronic stress can impact the body's health responses. So how healthy somebody is impacted by their stress in their lives.
Right. And also how chronic it is or unremitting, the different kinds of stress. People think of stress as sort of just a feeling, but it's more than a feeling. It's a biological reaction, and it can be triggered by feelings, but it can also be triggered by environmental factors, toxins in your environment, by sleeplessness, by working night shift jobs, from anxiety about how you're going to make ends meet, how you're going to get food on the table, how you're going to pay the expensive hospital bill. You know, people have this vague notion of stress, but the stressors I'm talking about include that idea of stress, so much more.
So, I mean, but let's take this out a little bit, because, I mean, if you are chronically stressed about, like, how you're going to get to work and how you are going to put food on the table for your family, I mean, doesn't that contribute to a sense of despair?
It can, but the distinction that I'm making is despair, first of all, is entirely a feeling, and especially if you talk about deaths of despair and look to suicide and opiate overdose and put those together, it kind of paints this picture of people who just give up and tune out, just unproductive and depressed and either literally kill themselves or kill themselves over time or take risks that could kill themselves very quickly. That's a very different thing than what I'm talking about, which is engaging with tenacity and even a kind of hopefulness the difficult obstacles and going to the two jobs, waiting for the bus, you know, not just going off and getting a drink, but that kind of what in jargon is called high effort coping itself can harm your body if it's chronic. When the going gets as tough as it's gotten for the least educated Americans over the last 25, 30 years, if they choose to try to engage and support their families and themselves anyway, it's sort of like batting their head against a wall.
So you actually do talk about this quite a bit, this idea of educational inequity and the role that educational inequity plays in sort of health disparities. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
In our study, we looked at the least educated Americans at any given time. So it's not just being less, say, than high school, because if you didn't graduate high school 50 years ago, that might not be a big deal. But if you don't graduate high school now, it certainly is in terms of your opportunities. And over this period of time, because we've moved so much to a high-tech economy and an automated economy and a globalized economy, people with the least education have the hardest time now finding jobs in our current economy. And even those who have them and have had them even consistently, their real wages have stayed stagnant for 30 years, while prices of housing, food, healthcare, everything's skyrocketed. So if your wages have stayed the same, your life is harder, even if you are employed.
So what is the takeaway? What do you hope this study will contribute to the general conversation around the data that shows that Americans are not living as long as they used to?
That it shows that the main drivers of that are cancers and cardiovascular diseases and internal causes. And that points in different directions than if you think people are despairing and taking drugs. And you would come up with different policies to address it. And as a researcher, we would pursue different avenues in researching it. And if, in fact, it's related to keeping on, even in the face of early onset of diseases and low wages and great uncertainty and illness in your family, that certainly points.
That was University of Michigan professor of public health Arline Geronimus talking about her research with health reporter Carol Lofton. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.